Welcome back to Bitter Jurors Podcast. We are a queer Legend of Korra superfan podcast. We are here today talking about Book 4, Chapter 3 of Legend of Korra, dubbed The Coronation by fans and creators alike. That is what the episode title is. And my name is Sam Stanish, and I have been one of your dedicated hosts of this beautiful show since its very inception, and that is unchanged. And with me, as always, is a little king who I love to go stop to. It's Derek Rining.
Yes, I'm glad we could like all come together. I totally forgot there was like a fan vote to like name this episode. It seems to be what you're implying there.
They call it that. The creators are like, this is what it's called, and the fans were like, we'll call it that too.
We agree. I like that. I feel like as fans, we should take it upon ourselves to just like fully disagree with creators, down to even the most granular details, like an episode title.
Yeah, character names are in question.
Absolutely.
Runtimes, who knows what fans really think about those. But we are, of course, not alone. We love having a guest here on the Bitter Jurors Podcast, and today is no different. Dubbed a legend by creators and fans alike, our guest today has been a guest numerous times on the podcast in the past, and today, I've said it before, I'll say it again, today is no different. The crowned royal of Legend of Korra, coronated here today, it is Rae Hamilton Vargo.
I'd like to thank you both so much for inviting me to be a guest on this podcast, especially for this episode. And I just wanted to say that, you know, in my time growing up on Legend of Korra Tumblr, I learned that men shouldn't speak. And so for that reason, I am taking over this podcast, and you two now have no power. Thank you.
Okay.
I think that's fair. I think that's a reasonable thing, and we shouldn't be podcasting.
I agree.
Oh, hold on. Derek has a cat, though. The cat should say something.
Gigi, the cat, is agreeing. She is saying, we are silencing queer voices, but only the men ones.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of populist fascism that's in vogue today, baby.
Absolutely.
I never want to hear from another person, let alone a man.
Now, wait a second. No, hold on. He's cooking.
God damn.
No more speech at all.
Absolutely.
A quiet place, even, is what we want, you know?
We should all be like Toph and just each find our own swamp to live in. And not see anybody else and just kind of touch the mud and be like, I know what they're up to. That's all I need.
Yeah, I don't need like an update. I feel like for Toph, it's like touching a root is like checking someone's Instagram stories, you know?
She did the ultimate touch grass. She was like, I'm logging off. I'm logging out of society. All I'm doing is touching grass, touching mud, touching swamp.
Almost exclusively.
Yeah. Avatar, I mean, Legend of Korra is all about parents being bad.
That is true, actually. You
know, obviously no different. We've known that for a while. But it's so funny to me that this reveal that Toph has been like able to check in on her daughters whenever she wants is like the worst possible outcome, where she's like, she knows that they needed her. But yeah. She's outie.
She's like, they seem kind of traumatized, but I was kind of traumatized and I was fine.
Builds character.
Okay. Also, it seems like, so we know Aang was not a good dad. Katara, mm-hmm. apparently, like, they don't talk a lot about how she was as a mom at all. It's like they forgot maybe that there were two parents. And now she just kind of hangs out at the North Pole. Or is it the South Pole? Who can say?
Well, they're connected physically now by a tube. So
easy, easy. Zuko had children, but
allegedly,
right? Allegedly, Zuko's family tree. Zuko was fathering. Yes. So it seems, but no one has anything to say about that. Does Sokka have kids?
I feel like there's a lot of fan theorying that one of Toph's children is Sokka's child. You know, I think that's just out of a desire to pair everyone up.
It's also like, it almost feels like they like storyboarded all of Legend of Korra and they were like, we figured it out. Like, what happened to every one of the gang? Fuck, wait, there was a guy called Sokka. Shit, we forgot. He's dead. He was a lawyer once.
Yeah, he died. That's that.
So did his broad, Suki.
Bitch, they died. yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny that...
She's unmentioned, it seems.
I mean, Zuko is in this episode with his daughter, but they like just kind of sit there and let fascism happen.
Yeah.
Just like he did the first time.
Oops. You'd think he would have some strong thoughts about it, but he's like, oh, yeah.
Well, he is a lord, so it's like, I guess he wouldn't be like, well, I know, you would think he'd be more in favor of like having monarchy.
You know what it is? He's gay, and so he saw a woman doing something evil, and he was like, girl boss, slay.
Slay, yes.
And I have to say, like, I get it.
He was clacking his fan.
Yes, exactly.
which May gave to him.
Yes. Oh god, yeah, Zuko is like that really obnoxious F word with the like loudest fan possible every 2 seconds. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
There was a cutscene where he handed Kuvira a dollar bill.
Yeah.
He was like waving it, like, come over here, come over here.
Yes. I see.
Like, $1.
Yeah, do they have a united currency? Did we establish that, I feel like, in the show?
Yuans.
Yeah. Right?
That's Republic City currency. Babe.
I was wondering about that last episode when Korra was like, I want to buy a fish. I was like, with what? Like, do you have your wallet? Like,
okay, yeah. And then, okay, because we were also, I remember this distinctly from the beginning of the show. Like, there is no Avatar savings bank. Like, no previous Avatar has set up an account where money is just accumulating, which is so, like, there's no way that Yang Chen wasn't that forward thinking. And it's just, like, stupid to me because, like, even Angel of Buffy and Angel did that. And he is someone who I would believe would never do that. But you're telling me that none of the like hundreds to thousands of previous avatars have ever been like, maybe future me wants some cash.
Maybe Ozai, like during the time that Aang was in the iceberg, like found the account and was like,
yeah. Mysterious. My theory is that, like, as the Avatar, you definitely can just like go around, like, start a tab, and then, like, when you die, it just like keeps going. Like, the next Avatar just like gets to put it on the tab.
They're like, one of these Avatars is going to be like an investment banker or something, and they'll figure it out.
Yeah, one day I'll get paid back for all these fish, but it's not today. Not in this lifetime.
Avatar is going to marry a venture capitalist or something.
Korra is the Avatar who's bad at the physical part of bending, and I really hope the next Avatar is bad at spiritual and physical and is truly just like in it to get money.
Yes, yes, they're an influencer.
Oh, please, I need it. my god.
Great. Well, talk to us about your sense memories when someone says Korra book 4, like where were you in your life, what were you up to? I know you'd seen Avatar before. Can't remember, were you watching Korra live? You mentioned Korra Tumblr just minutes ago.
Oh yes. Yeah, Korra book 4, that was coming out gosh, what, like 20? I'm looking it up.
This is 2014, and I didn't realize how early they had moved to only be online episodes. Was all of Book Four only online episodes? Maybe. This says that it aired, this episode, The Coronation, aired originally on the website on October 17th and didn't air on Nicktoons until November 28th. Not even Nicktoons. And then, yeah, the first episode is also originally aired on the website like 2 months before it ever aired on TV.
What was going on?
Sorry, yeah, so that is all to say 2014, fall of 2014.
Yes. So yeah, I mean, I was in college. I was like halfway through college. And yeah, I mean, I mostly remember, like, I was very heavily using Tumblr at that time. So like between every episode, it was like, what do we think is going to happen? What do we think about this? Is there a discourse about this? Is there a gif of that? You know, lots of like, for example, Prince Wu dancing in this episode. That was very, very gift. I still see that gif floating about sometimes. So yeah, it's honestly mostly a Tumblr sense memory.
The most powerful.
Yes. Truly. Yes.
Today I remember the text post, me when I have a cup of coffee, I am beautiful and fast. And I was like, that is literally so true.
Yes, exactly.
It was just a different time. I feel so bad for the youngsters who didn't get to experience it in all of its glory, ?
I tried going back on Tumblr a couple months ago. One of the like 18 times people were like, Twitter is dying.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. Like my brain has grown into a different shape. Like there's too much like touching the posts, like something traumatic happened here. Like I can't do it. I can't go back.
Yeah, it's putting yourself in a different headspace that I don't know if it's healthy for us at all. Probably not.
I was too much of a baby queer. I was too much of an emotional wreck. I was oof. Not that it's healthy to be on Twitter, but you know.
Yeah.
I cut out for a second, but I also did the same where recently, like 6 months ago, I joined Tumblr again. And I feel like I really love how fandoms exist on Tumblr still. Like, I feel like because in the years since I stopped using Tumblr, which was like 5 to 6 years ago at this point, like, I've primarily used Twitter and Reddit as fandom spaces. And like, they just literally, no one does it like Tumblr does. Like, if you search in a Tumblr tag for any show or anything you like there's beautiful fan art, just like panels of it just like constantly being generated, so much amazing stuff. And then like text posts analyzing these like random moments of scenes and like stuff you forgot about. Whereas on Twitter, if you search in a hashtag, the worst thoughts ever come up. And on Reddit, it's literally the same 10 posts every single day discussing over and over the exact same topics with someone making the exact same comment, bringing up some fun fact or whatever that literally everybody who spends time on the board already knows because somebody says it every single day.
Yeah. I would say Tumblr's strength was extrapolation. There, it's like any moment could be extrapolated on, could be analyzed in like a new and interesting way. Like you said, Sam, I feel like on Reddit, it's like, who knows the most about this, like from a production standpoint? It's like not about what are you bringing to it as a fan. And I feel like that's the space that Tumblr exists in. Like, there's like an entire account of this one single person who has like vast, like, to use a very outdated term, meta, about like every single like Digimon character, like human and non-human. It's like, that is the level of dedication we just don't see anymore.
Yeah. And on Twitter fandom, just the girls are fighting. The girls are fighting, fighting, fighting. Everybody's in a group chat. Everybody's blocking everybody. I don't know. Maybe it's like I'm only in one like fandom on Twitter, but it is, oh, it's just a mess. There's so many like, because on Twitter, like you can see like who's following who. So you can be like, oh, well, I noticed that one of my followers is still following this person who I called out yesterday. So maybe I'm going to block you. Like, there's just so much, like, there's too much you can tell about what's going on Twitter. There's too much, like, seeing other people's public conversations. It's,
You used to have to make a master post about that shit, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's just, yeah. And you know, like Tumblr like was so much more designed like for people to share works. Mm-hmm. And Twitter as a platform is designed for people to fight because that gets the website more engagement. So they want everybody to fight. It works. Ah, man.
Aw.
I agree, but there, you know, there was a lot of fighting on Tumblr still, so it's not like.
But it was more fun when we did it back then.
You could send it, okay, and we were talking about people fighting, but like anonymous messaging is built into the user interface of Tumblr.
The drama. Yes. I mean, I feel like the only thing that like kind of even remotely grasps at that is like a private quote retweet, but that's like. Like people screenshot that shit. Like there's, it's like nothing truly hits like an anonymous message.
Yeah. Yeah. There were a couple people on OFMD Twitter who made like alts just to be mean. Like this is my alt where I'm mean to people. Like, okay. There's one like TERF who keeps remaking her account and every single time like people notice it, they're like, no, out, absolutely blocking you. Stop it.
That does feel familiar, though. I mean, by my silence, communism kills moment. Like, yeah.
So iconic. Yeah.
I distinctly remember some drama from my Fire Emblem fandom days where it was discovered that someone in an RP group was actually two of the people in the RP group.
No!
And I don't even remember how it was figured out, but it's just like, why did you do this? Like, what is the purpose of this in the first place?
Do you mean one person had two accounts or two people had one account?
One person had two accounts.
My one of the group chats I'm in, people like every 3 days will be like, you know, we could be anybody in here. We could be duplicate people. It's like, yeah, you're right.
Wouldn't it be weird if I were two different people? Just throwing that out there.
I'm like dropping hints that I'm two different people.
What would you guys think if I revealed that I had an alias and the alias was in this room right now?
The coronation. We're here. Yes.
Recorded for like half an hour.
That's okay. I mean, I feel like this episode itself contains so much discourse about monarchies and hostile takeovers and bystanderism and isolationism.
Period. Rhetoric, yeah. Threats. What are we doing? Exactly.
It's fun to revisit this in my much more radical days because I definitely do not remember like the thought that both are bad. Like Wu and Guvira are bad options. Like Wu is bad because it's just monarchy again and he is clearly going to be a bad ruler, but also Guvira is bad because she is imperialism and like a conquistador, and so it's just kind of like neither good.
Yeah it's so funny, like there's a couple of mentions in this episode of like, now wait a second, like somebody gave Guvira this job, like she wasn't elected, it wasn't like all the people of the Earth Kingdom were like, we want Guvira to be in charge, like she's like, oh, you, the people of the Earth Kingdom don't want the monarch that you picked out for them, and it's like they didn't pick out Wu, he was like part of this he's just like the guy that's alive from this family. they did pick out you. Like, specifically, they hired you. And it's, I love the part at the beginning where they're just like, oh, I know Kuvira will step down because she said she would.
Mm-hmm. I trust her implicitly. Well, I will say they do like very, they depict like the ineptitude at every level in a way that feels true to life.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
I just didn't, and you know, I probably was aware that, both, I don't know what I thought back then, but you know, it's just like, it wasn't something that rings out of my mind as part of the, because in my memory, I'm just like, oh yeah, and Prince Wu was a fun character, but now I'm like, actually, shouldn't.
Yeah, it's yeah. Like, I feel like, especially after recent elected officials, the idea of like a goofball leader is like not nearly as endearing as like it maybe once was.
Yeah, yeah, no. It's interesting. There's a couple different moments in this episode of characters reckoning with like their place in a power structure. Because you have Toph talking about how she's like, oh yeah, I was a cop for a bunch of years. And then I realized that the cops didn't stop crime. And I'm like, okay, at least you figured that out. Could have figured that out earlier, but like, good for you. You have Bolin having his moment of like, yeah, sometimes I look at myself in the mirror and I think I'm in trouble, but then I realize it's just me. It's like, that's like, the fact that your instinct when you see yourself in the mirror is to be afraid of the uniform you're wearing should be like your subconscious is trying to tell you something, baby. Like, you have to listen. Like, seriously. And then the funniest thing to me is how immediately Wu, like, you know, he has his meltdown. He goes into the restaurant. He sits in the chair. He's, like, crying. And then Mako is like, you would not be a good leader. And he's like, yeah, you're right.
He's willing to take a critique.
Yes.
He's gonna listen to Mako because Mako is his tough guy.
Big burly Mako.
Oh boy. Macho Mako.
I do feel like this is the best character design wise Mako has been.
Yes. His like little like capris. I don't know how to describe the pants he wears, but there's a lot of sock showing. It's cute.
He's in his little suit.
He's all cleaned up, not in a cop uniform. Love it.
Yay.
Just like a kind of secret service, but like unwillingly so. I love how like he's like the Mako version of Gleeful when he was like packing his stuff, like, guess I don't have to do this anymore. That's cute.
Oh yeah. I was amazed that he like even was hanging out with Prince Wu for any amount of time after the coronation, but there you go.
I just think Mako just doesn't have friends, I think, is the problem. So he's like, I guess I should just hang out here.
With his best friend.
I'm a smoothie. Yes, exactly.
Literally. Poor guy. I mean, to be fair, Asami's just not around, apparently. So,
no.
Asami's not around. Korra is literally not around. And his brother is not around, hanging out with fascists a little bit. So,
yeah. It's a lonely time.
Bolin runs into other characters we know a lot for being on a train in various parts of the world.
Yep. They're just kind of like, he's moving, so we'll let him meet everybody that's not exactly in Republic City. That's fine.
We get the return of Sue, which we love.
Yes. I feel like she's the best at confronting people. Like, I know she has bad family strife in her past, but I do think that every scene where she is like in conflict with another person is the best scene of the episode.
I also love, like, Kuvira literally throws her under the bus in her speech. Kuvira's like, because I grew up with Sue Lin and the Metalbenders, I realized that I needed to become the new imperious leader of the Earth Kingdom. Thank you. And I would love to know how that conversation with the world leaders went, where they were like, Sue, you got to talk to her.
I know.
Meanwhile, in the gold bar.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'm sad we didn't get that scene. I assume it's because they couldn't get like the voice actors for people back or something, but it's like, why couldn't we get like a scene of like, what does our best friend Zuko think about it?
Or even Tenzin, like anyone.
But
yeah, Sue does a great job. She points out, like, you are not elected. Like, you are forcing people into this sort of, like, protectionist thing where, like, they're going to get robbed and beaten up if they don't join you. Like, you know, she's making all the points. She's very iconic at that. But yeah, we get the return of Sue. We get the return of Eska and Desna.
Well, to go back just one second for the Sue conversation, Sue and Kuvira are talking, and Kuvira is like, well, you could have been in this role, but you didn't want to. And then Sue is like, I didn't want to because I didn't want to get power for myself. But it's like, is Sue in that moment recognizing that she would have the same issue that Kuvira is having now, where she isn't willing to give up the power if she were to be in charge of this like major army? Like, because it sounds like she could have been the one, and then in Sue's mind at least, she thinks that she would have been able to, or wouldn't have been able to, give up the power to the monarchy. Who knows? But it's like, what was that conversation?
Yeah, I'm confused. I'm just confused about, like, because Kuvira seems to imply that, like, Sue was, like, asked, like, do you want to, like, help people? And I guess Sue said, no, thanks. We're just going to keep our little place by itself, which is, like, that's upsetting. I want to hope that that's, like, an accurate portrayal of what happened, because it's, like, clearly Sue is, like, a very smart, capable person with, like, a lot of resources at her hand. Like, surely she would give some up to the struggling Earth Kingdom people, but it's, like, so that's why it's like hard to fully be, I don't know, not, or like, obviously we're not on Kuvira's side, but it's like, I can understand like her frustration if like the most powerful, like influential woman you know is like refusing to help people. Yeah.
Right. And it's also like, well, so what I think is, because the whole thing with Zhao Fu is they're like, you know, they're not interested in like being ruled by the monarchy. I think that's part of the reason that like she's there. Like, yeah, she's in charge of Zhao Fu. And so I wonder if they approached her, and the way they put it was like, can you like make sure the Earth Kingdom is ready for the next monarch to take over? She would probably be like, I don't want to do that.
Right.
And, you know, what am I going to do if I go around and get people together, like, for not the royalty, like, then am I getting them together for me? I don't know. Also, okay, there was, like, a second in this episode where her son, Batar Jr., was like, it's just Batar now. And I was like, what happened to his dad? Where did Batar Sr. go? So, like, does something happen to him? I don't remember.
I think he's just trying to distance himself from his family, but then when he just, like, fully not go by Batar at all.
Right, like, did you have a middle name, baby? Like, what happened? Maybe not. And I don't know if they do middle names.
Wouldn't the greater, like, removal be to stop going by Beifong?
Right.
Yeah.
have a lot of questions.
Yeah, but I'm saying, if there was something going on with like, okay, there's strife around her son leaving, and did something maybe happen to her husband, is she like, I am not in an emotional place where I can go around this damn country, I gotta get my city back together? Who knows, you know, the episode is short and they put a lot in this one. A lot of stuff happens in this one.
Yeah, I loved this episode. So good. I feel like, I think it was probably my favorite of the three so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. We haven't even like touched the Korra Toph stuff yet, I feel like.
Oh, the Korra Toph stuff is so fun. I love how Toph just immediately, like, she became an old lady so well. Like, her personality, like, you could tell someone who's like as sort of like cantankerous as her, and who loves to like mess with people, like would really struggle with the parts of adulthood where you're supposed to like be responsible and stuff. But like as a young child and as an old woman, she's like, perfect. I can just be a little bitch to people and what are they gonna do? And yeah, she's like the part where she's just like laughing and she's like, I kicked your ass and I'm an old lady. Imagine what I would have done in my prime. That's amazing. Like Korra's suffering so much and she's just like, that's so funny. I love beating up the Avatar. Yeah, I just love like being a cop for so long did not destroy her personality. She has rejected the police force. She's rejected society and she is still top Beifong. And I love that.
Same. It's like perfect.
It is. And I'm glad that, you know, she did beat up Korra because in the previous episode, we saw random people beating up Korra. So if Toph wasn't able to, it just wouldn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, that would be rough. And also Korra's, I'd like how they're like communicating Korra's like lack of, like she's lost her stuff because her, like all of her bending movements are so slow and like very like punch one rock. And it's like, what happened to our girl who was doing like a back handspring into a twist and like throwing fire and air and rocks in every which way? It's like, it's sad. It's like, I need to see my girl like fully revved up, ready to go again.
Yeah. And it's an interesting, like, it's an interesting storyline because like there are some issues I have with like any kind of like disability as a metaphor for an emotional thing that you are working through. You know, it's like, well, people with disabilities are real and they also work through emotional things. But at least this isn't like, you know, you're not going to run into a real person at the grocery store who has metal bending poisoning.
Yeah.
They, like, made up a thing. Like, that,
right.
That's me, at least. And the metaphor, I don't know. I don't know how much we want this to go to in order or how much I can talk about the end of the episode. But the metaphor of, like, basically Toph saying like you are holding on to your pain because you are afraid of like having to put yourself in a situation where you would be vulnerable to being hurt again. Like that is something I think a lot of people can relate to. That is very real. And especially the fact that she's like, no, I did the thing I was supposed to do. I went to the metal bender. I went to Katara. Like I should be fixed. It's like you go to therapy for 3 weeks and you're like, I should be done. I should be past this painful part of my life. And, you know, it just takes someone who's like been through a lot and is like wise and experienced to be like, no, you're very obviously still carrying this with you. And I remember that being such a gag the first time I watched this episode. Like Toph has just known the whole time, like, oh yeah, well, you're still like riddled with poison, obviously. like she just assumes Korra knows that. And it's like, listen, like, you know, for this last part, like you need to be able to do some of the work yourself because like you are subconsciously holding on to this, like, because you don't want to get hurt again. Which, you know, again, unfortunately relatable.
Yes.
The reveal that she still has metal in her body makes sense. And it's like, okay, now we're understanding why Korra, like, for she's carried this like poison around with her for 3 years, and you just understand the issues she's been having with her physicality. But at the same time, it's kind of like not that interesting of a reveal character wise where you're like, oh, so like it's not any emotional thing holding her back from like continuing to thrive as the Avatar. So it's really good. I love that they decided to make it like she's continuing to hold on to the issue, which is why she's still going through it. Because I feel like a book one writer's room may have just had her be healed here. And I feel like they're leaning into more interesting things of late.
Right. No, like that's what you expect at first. It's like, okay, she went on this whole quest. She went to the polls. She went to Republic City. She was in the fighting ring. Finally, she followed the spirit to the swamp and she met Toph, who's like in her Yoda era. And like Toph is just going to pull the poison out and the great quest is done. And it's like, no, you have to work on yourself. You cannot just like walk around and find an old lady to fix it. Like you have to do it.
Yeah, which it's like that feels like such a great through line through like the original series where there has always been this connection of like emotional well-being and like physical well-being, like Aang unlocking the chakras is like very much in this sort of like physiological sort of like both physiological and spiritual space of like, yes, there are like spiritual things, but they're like in your body and like they correspond to parts of your body. And so that feels like true to the universe for it's like, yes, it's like there's like a physical aspect to this that needs to be fixed. However, it also is like tied like intrinsically in your into your emotional state. So it's not like, oh, if you just take it out, it's like we're done. It's like you have to work through something in order to take it out.
Yeah. Right. And it even calls back to a lifetime ago when Toph was teaching Aang how to earthbend. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's not just like, okay, you have to move your hands like this and then do this. Like it was part of like the way he was thinking about it and the way he was approaching it that he also like needed to change. And so she's like, this same shit again? Oh my God.
There's no trickety trick that's going to let you move that rock.
Period.
And I believe you were our guest on that same episode. Better work.
That's right.
Better work.
You better work.
You better work. Yes. Top correspondent from the beginning to this part.
Wow. That's such a full circle moment. I love.
Beautiful.
Yes.
I loved all of the Toph fighting stuff. Like she moves so smoothly and like she's not even like moving sometimes, but she's still like earthbending, which obviously kind of goes against the like thesis of the show or whatever, but because it's Toph, you're like, yeah, she can just kind of like slide around.
But Boomy was doing that stuff.
No, too, yeah. Like, I just mean like you think of the show and you're like, the magic is the movement, but that's how powerful she is, and not to invoke a terrible franchise, but it's kind of like when Hermione casts a spell without using a word, and you're just like, damn, she's on a whole other level from everyone else.
Slay. Related but unrelated tangent, I saw a clip of someone, like I think from the Bling Ring, of Emma Watson, and I think the caption was just like, I can never tell if she's like really good at acting or really, really bad.
You know, it's so hard when someone's British, like it's really hard to tell.
I was like, how did that relate? And I was like, and now I understand,
because it's Hermione. Of course.
I know now, but it just took me a second.
Well, if an American person can speak like a British, that's how you know they're a good actor. So if British people can always speak like that, so what are we supposed to say?
I remember a Joel Kim Booster tweet from right after he saw Little Women, and it just read, Emma Watson, were we tricked?
Help. You know... They were little kids when they did those Harry Potter movies. And so basically they decided, you know, like, you're 10, you're going to be famous for the rest of your life. Good luck. And, you know, that panned out in some different ways.
Yeah. True. You got your Daniel Radcliffe, like, doing the right thing. You got your Emma Watson question mark. Don't know if she's ever had any thoughts on any of this. And Rupert Grint was in Knock at the Cabin.
Period. Yeah, Daniel Radcliffe is really, really killing it. He's Weird Al. He loves queer people. Go for him. Go for
He's
him.
Just like me for real.
Just like me for real, exactly.
Speaking of problematic franchises, Ray actually texted me a couple days ago to inform me that the person playing Sokka in the live action Avatar is actually white and lied about having Native ancestry to get the part.
You're joking.
So messed up.
People have checked with, like, I think he, I don't have the receipts on hand, but they exist if you Google it. But I think he says he's like, oh yeah, like I am part Cherokee. And like the tribe that has a record of him is literally like a tribe that you could just pay to join. And the actual like verified Cherokee Nation is like, we don't know who this guy is. He is not part of this tribe. It's yeah, it's kind of embarrassing. It's not great.
Zoinks. Well, shit. It's a good thing I wasn't planning on enjoying that live action adaptation anyway.
Hey, but maybe once they finish Avatar and they do a live action version of Korra, they'll get it right that time.
Maybe. Fingies crossed.
It'll really happen.
Okay, that's a real humdinger of a hot goss.
Stuff I've been learning on fandom Twitter. I'm so sorry.
Wow. No, you never apologize. I feel like I'm so like disconnected from the fandom aspect of Korra, which feels so perverse.
And see, I've got my feet in the mud, just like Toph. They're filthy, but I know what's going on.
That's good.
I love, at one point in this episode, she's like, oh yeah, the swamp benders around here really can't take a hit. I'm like, I need to know what kind of interaction she's having with these swamp benders.
I can imagine she just like ambushes them and just like flings them around for like 10 minutes and then she gets bored and like leaves.
Were so used to their, what is that guy's name? The leader of the swamp benders in the first series.
Was that Hugh?
He was always dressed up in all those vines, and I bet Toph just like moves around in a gigantic earth creature and just like terrorizes them.
She's like a Scooby-Doo like, villain.
Mm-hmm. New cryptid in town. Oh my gosh.
I love that idea.
Toph like is a cryptid. She is doing her Bran Stark thing, able to see across the entire world. She's just like moving around, knowing everyone's secrets in a secret spiritual misty swamp. That's like a definition of a cryptid. And she's like really old and powerful.
Yeah, yeah. She was like, yeah, I was gonna just like bathe my feet in mud for 3 weeks. And it's like, I don't know if she was planning on eating. I don't know if she was planning on sleeping. Like, she's just gonna sit with her feet in the mud. Good for her. Like,
she doesn't need anything else. Different level.
What are Toph's thoughts on the monarchy and what all is going on? You know what? What is her action? You know.
Yeah, she seems like a very ambivalent god who just like knows everything that's happening.
she saw everything that was happening in the previous seasons and did nothing to stop it. Like, she knew where Aman was hiding out.
Oh, she's over.
You know what? She already helped save the world that one time. She's like, I did it.
Yeah, you know, some like
also see like, oh, it looks like Korra's got this one fairly.
I mean, to be fair, it's like that's like kind of Korra's whole job. It's like this shouldn't be on Toph to have to like deal with every like.
He's retired.
Yeah.
When you are one of the most powerful people in existence, you do have a obligation to the world.
But like one of,
so she can't retire. So she can have, she should have a lifetime appointment, like the Supreme Court.
I'm just saying that she should at least be on call. Someone should be able to call her in.
That's fair. Well, if Katara gets to just like be on the edge of the earth and like never be bothered by anyone, then so should Toph.
Never be bothered by anyone. She's there healing people every season. She's on the front lines.
But she doesn't have to move.
That's true. But like they went to her and they were like, Katara, the Avatar is broken. Please fix her.
Yeah.
And, right. You know, Mar got her walking again and stuff like that. And, you know, if they knew where Toph was, they could have been like, Toph, can you check for extra metal?
Yeah. Or like, yeah, Toph, the Avatar is broken. You fight Zaheer.
Yeah, exactly. No, I also love Toph at one point in this episode. It's when she finds the rest of the metal poison, she's like, Oh yeah, like my kids never really picked up metal bending, and like Sue has made her whole thing like we have a whole metal city where like metal bending is all we do. We have mastered every part of metal bending. We're building, we're fighting, we're dancing, we're making art. And Toph is like mid.
It's mid, yeah. Oof. I know that's rough, but it makes perfect sense for Toph. You know?
Oh, absolutely. She came up with it. She's the original Beifong. I love that she says that. She had
parents. But she, yeah, wait, hold on. Mother of the house.
And they were like notable people. It's not like they were random commoners who didn't accomplish. I mean, who knows what they really accomplished, but they had the last name, you know? That's like our, that's the only thing we know about rich people in this universe. They have last names.
She was the, like, she was a Nepo baby. Why are your parents' names blue on Wikipedia, Toph?
But like, imagine if George W. Bush was like, I'm the original Bush. You're not. That's why we have to say your middle initial.
He would say that, I think, though. You know?
I mean, I would put nothing past him at this point.
But yes, it's so nice to have Toph back in our lives. Missed her. Love that her sense of style has not changed a scooch at all.
Yeah, she grew her hair out a little bit.
Yeah, the bun just became larger.
That's it. Very good.
I'm sure Katara was the one being like, Toph, you need to cut your hair. And so now that hair loopies is out of the picture, she can just grow whatever she wants.
Exactly.
Yeah, as long as she can tie it up, like, who's looking at it? Nobody. So, like, yeah, who cares?
The trees, the swamp benders. Oh my god, I mean, speaking of swampy stuff though, I will say my favorite thing that I never noticed before was the little frog squirrel thing that like hopped on Korra. So cute.
So cute. Such a fun combination.
I know, and it was
a couple of little jumpy guys.
Yeah, he's just chilling. He just wanted to check on her. And the return of the elbow leech.
That bullfrog was voiced by Dee Bradley Baker.
Of course.
I saw on the Wikipedia page.
Get it. Get that credit. Get that paycheck. Yes.
Secure the bag.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
The frog squirrel. yeah, I feel like that was like our cute critter sort of like quota. We were promised badger moles, but then they never appeared, which was pretty upsetting.
I love Prince Mood dancing at the beginning while they're talking about politics. Like, yes, you need a twink, like, hip thrusting to make me pay attention to you talk about politics. Like,
absolutely.
You got a cocoa melon this for me. Like, I am not paying attention otherwise.
Yes, which Avatar character is the most likely to unironically watch the videos that are, like, Family Guy clips with, like, mobile games? Like, I feel like a Bolin.
I'm not watching the Family Guy ones, but I do watch those ones sometimes where it's like a Minecraft guy running around while a Reddit post is being read out loud. It's like, and sometimes those come up and you're like, what is this relationship drama about?
And then you like don't click at the bottom to see how long the video is, and then like 23 minutes of your life are gone.
My major issue with those videos is that they used to be seamless, like the Minecraft person would perfectly hit the jump and they would land perfectly and it would just never stop running. But now sometimes I get videos where they do make a mistake or they miss something or like they like run into a wall and then just like jump and then it keeps going. And I'm sure that's partially because they want people to comment being like, damn, it wasn't as satisfying as it could have been because you hit that wall and get more comments, but it really isn't.
Right, like, I'm not listening to what you have to say now. I'm thinking, like, start over.
Just a jump.
What the fuck? I don't use TikTok at all, and it's just like, oh, my Lord. I can't pass any judgment, but my God.
People out there know what I'm talking about.
So we're staring at their phones.
I guess it's kind of like when, I feel like, okay, so, have you ever played like those shitty awful like mobile games which have ads for other shitty awful mobile games in them?
I've been on Grindr, yes.
But like, so
what's like, give her a makeover, like knock yes. down the wall. What's
become more bald.
What's grandma plotting?
Like, but those ones, it's like yes, they absolutely. Always fuck up because they want you to be like, no, I can play this game so much better than the little cursor. Yeah. And then it always turns out that the game is nothing like that.
Of course. Of course.
Definitely for a while, there was a trend of people on TikTok who were just downloading those games and putting up videos of them playing it well because of that, where they're like, I know people want to see this game done right.
Now you don't have to play it. You can see, look, I got all the little balls in the little part of the shape where they're supposed to be. It's over.
Hallelujah.
Our
modern world.
Seriously.
We need an avatar who understands all of these struggles.
Prince Wu would understand. Prince Wu would watch somebody actually running around a little maze for 20 minutes while someone else read him a story about, somebody's ex-roommate. He would love that.
He's an iPad baby for sure, like in spirit.
If TikTok were around, the Earth Kingdom would be on Prince Wu's side.
Absolutely. They would be like, they would be RPFing him and Mako so hard, it would be unbelievable. They'd be like, who's that guy in the background?
That's my bodyguard. I've told you guys before, this is Mako.
Yeah. A real, like, very Mary-Kate bodyguard dynamic. To do a really niche reference.
I love the reference. Yeah, well, I love the scene where Wu saw those people wearing shirts that had Kuvira's face on it.
Yeah.
He actually sees this in the marketplace moment. He's like, I'm tearing this place down. The mall that is shaped like Ba Sing Se, that apparently has like the cheaper shops in the lower ring, and then like the mid shops in the middle ring, and then the expensive shops in the upper ring. I wouldn't hate a mall being laid out like that. I'm going to say it.
That's
like,
so cool.
I just know, like, oh, I'm not going over there. I do not have enough money for that.
Wait, okay. Why was this episode even taking place in Republic City? Like, they have never in the past cared about character travel timelines at all. Like, just put it in Ba Sing Se. Like, they're doing the Earth Kingdom coronation in No Man's Land, Republic City. Like, who cares? Just be like, we're all here and we took the train to Republic City. I mean, to Ba Sing Se. Just like, why?
Yeah, is it supposed to still be in shambles, maybe?
Maybe. But wouldn't this be a great symbol for the blah, blah, blah?
I don't like symbols.
What I did like that they managed to put in this episode is we've all been kind of going like, Balin, why are you there? Like, why are you there with them? I think they did a good job of pointing out, like, Balin and Mako, like, got to see what it was like for their extended family, like, living in the Earth Kingdom, and it was really rough. And so Balin was like, okay, I can, like, help people who are in this situation, and, like, that is how he is seeing his job. And, like, obviously that is part of the job sometimes that he gets to do. It is not the full shape of everything Kuvira is doing, but, like, you know, in, I forget if that was episode one or episode two, you know, they show up on the train and they're handing out food and he gets to feel great about that, and he doesn't have to see the parts where apparently people are getting sent to labor camps.
Just a casual revelation.
Yeah, they literally, like, slip that in there. They're like, did you hear about the labor camps? Anyway.
There was a lot of, like, more on that later in this episode, where it's like Barrack being like, and we've got this tree. We're going to go work on it. And then also Tenzin being like, I've got air nomads looking everywhere for Korra, and I'm going to send my kids too. And then the kids are like, we'll do it.
Such a fun way to end the episode. Like, oh, I cannot wait to see more of those crazy kids.
Our little, what do you want to call them? I don't know. Air babies? Is that what people call them?
Yes.
Sure.
Even though Junora is an airbending master now.
Oh, sorry. Air young adults.
The tree in the like jar, to say more on Tumblr, was giving me Pacific Rim. Felt like that was Charlie Day's vibe in that movie.
Ooh, yeah, that was around the same time, wasn't it?
Mystical thing.
So,
yeah. Okay, not to go like too far back, but two moments I have not talked about yet. The whole like fight over the hotel room is so funny, and it's such a like. I feel like it's so emblematic of like why it is like, no, both of these sides are bad. Like the people who are struggling in villages in the Earth Kingdom do not care who has the presidential suite. Like a real leader would be like, just put me in the fucking hotel. I don't care. But Kuvira, like her introduction to Prince Wu, she's like, something you should know about me. I always get what I want. And it's about kicking him out of his hotel room. Like that is not like impressive or like incredible. That's like, wow, that's like the ultimate Karen move. You were like, I am seeing this presidential suite, like, ma'am.
She did it in a mother way.
she did. Fucking Prince Wu also is like, oh, the hotel staff loves me, I've been living here for 3 years, and it's like, you know they can't stand him.
No, absolutely, you know, he
never tips. Absolutely not.
Just leaves those towels everywhere.
God.
What a freak.
And I loved to, even if it was just for a second, I loved to see Eska.
Yeah. Aubrey Plaza.
I love her. Like, she had a moment. She looked at Kuvira and she was like, the evil sapphic in me recognizes the evil sapphic in you. Like, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then they randomly gave her and her brother an only one bed trope moment.
Like, are we going for like a weird incest joke? And then it was about like, no, they're just weird because he sleeps in the tub.
I'm glad that they instantly gave us that clarification, because I was like, why is this even in this episode?
Yeah, it was a strange
Someone decision. In the writer's room had read like Eska Desna fan fiction and was like, wouldn't it be funny if we shouted them out for half a second and then we're like, no.
I also, to say more on Kuvira as a out and proud lesbian woman, I loved the part where I think her husband her fiance is talking to Sue and he's like, I'm sure you've heard we're engaged now or whatever. Like, he's really trying to prove that their relationship is real.
I don't know if you've heard, but I'm engaged to a woman.
So that makes us legitimate.
Yeah.
Neither of us is gay.
This is not a lavender marriage, period. No.
We don't even know what that is in this world. We're dressed in green.
Oh my gosh. And then Prince Wu saw Kuvira and was like, has anyone claimed this beard? Hello. And the answer was yes.
Well, Wu, I feel like, is like ready. Mako is not. I feel like Wu is ready for them to be official.
Yeah. He's just sort of like, why don't we just go as best buddies to the mall and I'll buy you a smoothie? And he's like, he keeps like grabbing his shoulders. It's like, no, Wu knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Mako, like, do you want to go to the Mako's spa with me?
He just knows Mako's going to play hard to get no matter what. So he's just trying to play it a little cool for Wu, you know?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Playing it cool is when you have a breakdown in the tourist restaurant because you wanted to sit in the fake throne and you fought a child over it.
Exactly. That's, you know, as cool as it gets. What a time.
I really hope the monarchy wins and that Prince Wu is back on the throne next episode.
Yeah. Is that what we're supposed to hope for? I like, can't really tell like what we're supposed to be rooting to happen.
Yeah, they haven't really presented us an alternative that seems good. Like, they haven't seemed to give us some like ruler that, or like some organized form of, I guess they kind of are on the side of like independent states if they're run by the right people.
That's true, because that guy was like really good, like watching out for his citizens and stuff.
Yeah, but then the issue was that there were bandits, but Kuvira still wouldn't help unless he was coerced into being part of the empire, I guess. But like that, I feel like that argument or that aspect wasn't on screen at all, and they'd mentioned it just like in passing this episode. But I think that's the thing we're supposed to root for, at least at this point.
I think so. Sure.
But it does seem very strange and at odds with the philosophy of the show. Like, it feels like there needs to be like a united Earth thing, not like a bunch of separate Earth kingdoms, but or Earth city states or whatever. So it doesn't, like, even though that's the best thing that they've presented so far this season, it doesn't feel like it is the right thing, or like isn't like something that they want to spend a lot of time on anyway. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like what they're doing this season is like, I mean, similar to like the book one and book three, like there's this sort of like, okay, here's the bad guy and we don't like the bad guy, but there are some points that they have made. And like book one, they did that very clumsily. Like they didn't even really point out in the text that there were some points that Amon had made. They were just like, man, this Amon guy sure is saying stuff, huh? Get rid of him. But like book three was so much more complex, where it was like, okay, we're like talking to Zaheer. We're like seeing where he's coming from. And I think, like, I don't know, I think this, like, makes sense as a sort of, like, we're sort of getting to a more complex place. It's not you finish the quest and the old lady pulls the poison out of your body. It's not there's a good guy and a bad guy and you can just go ahead and support the good guy. It's, like, things are complicated. You are, like, resisting healing your own things. And also, like, man, sometimes there's two sides of politics and you don't like either of them. And what are you supposed to do? Uh-oh. And, you know, that's... I think that they're doing a good job of showing, like, no, Wu would not be a good ruler. No, Kuvira would not be a good ruler. So it's like, you know, we're early enough in the book that it doesn't seem weird for them to be like, okay, we're setting it up where we have two bad options. So now what?
That's fair.
But it definitely feels like I'm ready for Korra to be where the rest of the story is.
Yes, she feels very separate, which, like, love having our Toph time, but it's... I just want her to be with her friends and doing things.
Yeah.
They should. Back in book one, there's that episode where all four of them get in Asami's car and, like, go patrolling through Republic City, and it's like, that should have been the whole show, but, you know, we didn't get that.
Oopsie. Yeah, they got arrested, like, within that episode. They're like, this is not lasting.
And now so many of them are cops. What's happening?
Wait, why are they all cops?
Very strange. Yeah, the cops were, like, fully, like, bought off and evil in the first season. It's, like, weird.
That's so, I mean, that, again, like, I do appreciate them having the line for Bolin of, like, oh, it's, I look at myself in the mirror and I'm, like, worried that I'm in trouble. Like, you know, they're not being actively pro-cop in this episode. And isn't that...
That's powerful.
...some growth?
Yeah. I love that for them. Well, any other thoughts on this very fun episode? I agree with you, Sam. This was just a really nice episode. Felt like it was hitting some hard-hitting topics. And had some sick dance moves from Wu.
The only thing we were missing was Asami, which is a big mess.
Literally.
But we got...
That's why I loved it so much. Oh. Hate that girl.
What the hell?
Can you imagine?
Sam, you've been spending too much time on Reddit. Get out of there.
No, no. We've lost him.
So. But yeah, I loved everything else about this. It was a fascinating Mako and Bolin interaction. They don't have a handshake. They just pretend to punch each other. Okay.
They have to verbally remind us that they're related every time they interact.
Yeah.
Well, one of them is always in red and one of them is always in green. How are we supposed to know they're related?
So it gets confusing. But they always have to be like, hey, I'm your brother. And so the audience can be like,
that's my brother.
Hey, bro. What's going on? I haven't seen you in a couple years.
We have the same parents.
Mako literally says, I don't know about this, bro. Great fascism. I don't know about this, bro.
Me. I don't know about this, bro.
I love it.
Okay. Now I'm thinking maybe it's intentional that, like, there are no good sides in this. Like, Mako and Bolin are both fascist. Tenzin is running, like, a world secret police agency.
With child soldiers.
With child soldiers. And all of the world leaders are sitting by and watching as Kubier just takes over and, like, doing nothing, even though they're really powerful benders. And so maybe it's because Korra isn't there. Like, Korra has been removed and now everybody has lost their way. Is that giving them too much credit?
No, I mean, like, they're talking about how, like, I mean, there is the like amazing moment here where Kuvira is like, or where Korra is like, they need me, and Toph's like, nobody needs you. It's just so brutal. But you know, talking about, like, the greater purpose of the Avatar as they move into a world where, like, lots of people can metal bend and they also have, like, all this great technology. Like, there's been conversation in the show since the beginning of, like, you know, okay, there's, you know, differences in, is there differences in equality between, like, Avatar, most benders, regular people, you know, and does that still make sense in a world where we have, like, developing technology? And I think, like, part of what they're trying to get at is, like, part of the Avatar's job, and, like, Korra has struggled this whole time with the spiritual side of being the Avatar. But part of the Avatar's job has always been, like, to protect balance. So it's not like we need a superhero. It's not like we need an Avengers team. Like, there are benders in every town and city in the world, and you also now have, like, ships and trains and weapons, which, you know, have pros and cons, but, like, you don't need a superhero. You need someone to, like, help protect the, like, larger, like, spiritual balance, who also has some superpowers. And so, yeah, I think that, I don't think it's giving them too much credit to say that they are remembering that the Avatar protecting balance is, like, one of the big things.
Yeah. She's the special sauce that they're missing.
Yeah.
She's the guide. Like, even though she doesn't always know what's right or what's going on, she
she doesn't even need to know what's happening. She just needs to show up in a situation and start throwing things.
But I do think there's a reason that, like, I think that it was purposeful that, like, okay, during this time skip, like, Team Avatar, like, scattered to the winds. Like, everybody's doing something else somewhere else.
Asami's a billionaire. Sorry, I didn't mean to let her escape my criticisms.
Oh. Yeah. Don't let Asami or Varric, like, skip away. They're doing.
Oh, yeah, Varric has never been good.
Yeah, he built the submersible. You know, he, like, didn't just get in it. Like, I think that's Varric's tea. You know.
Mm. Oh my god. Well, and it's
timely reference that no one will care about in a month.
People are gonna be like, wait, there wasn't a submarine in this episode?
Wait, we already have submarines in this universe. I forgot about that.
Aka invented them.
Yes, he did.
Attaboy. Oh boy. But yeah, no, it's that's another, like, random aside. They're like, oh yeah, like, Kuvira had Varric pardoned. Okay.
Work.
Crazy that she has that power.
You know, like, sometimes all it takes is being. Sometimes you just gotta be a silly guy and everyone will forgive you.
Mm-hmm. Silly guys and lesbians. That's what this show is all about, actually, I think.
I agree. It's kind of like the ultimatum queer love in that way.
Exactly.
Another exactly. Timely reference that, once again, no one will really care about in a month.
I think people will remember. Especially
haven't
that
seen, you haven't seen.
You specifically said the ultimatum queer love, like, yes. As opposed to just being like, Here's a little reference.
Right, that's fair. Sam, you should watch The Ultimatum Queer Love. Can't speak to the straight one, but the queer one is just like ridiculous in the best way. Perfect reality television. Kooky, kooky people.
That's all I've heard. I've heard it's wild stuff.
It is. And I loved every second of it.
I also haven't seen it. That's my confession. Hey. But I've also heard that it's great.
It is really fun. There are fellow Chicagoans in it.
Ooh. Now I have to watch it to know if I know anybody on the show.
Literally, lesbians are so funny. One of my lesbian friends knows one of the contestants. Like, fully, like, went on dates with them. Like,
I have to have moots with one of those contestants at least. Like, yeah, no. Oh my God. Yeah, okay, I'm going to watch it.
You're just welcome. Like, for
the same reason I watched the first season and a half of Dance Moms.
Oh, whew.
We had moots.
Excellent choice.
Abby Lee Miller and I had moots.
Oomph is literally Maddie Ziegler.
Oomph is literally Holly Dance Moms.
Yes. Those Dance Moms are my
faculty members.
Oh my God. Well, do we have any other thoughts on The Legend of Korra? Book 4, Chapter 3?
No, well, it was called The Coronation, and we can all agree on that.
Agree on it.
I love how Wu is so comfortable in his status as a little guy. He wants to be carried. Like, yeah.
I know. He's the OG boy wife. That's what his goal was.
Exactly.
Do you think Wu calls himself a femboy, or is one of the people posting about femboy being a slur?
Oh, wow. I don't think he even knows what a slur is. Like, you know?
He knows what a femboy is, but not what a slur is.
Yeah. I feel like he's just like...
I think that's a lot more people than you might think.
Yeah, oh, that's fair. No. I don't think Wu gets into discourse. Well, maybe he does get into discourse. I feel like he's just someone who... he's kind of like Muffy from Arthur, where he's like, that's richest, you know? Like, that's as far as his discourse meter goes.
Right.
And he loves curves.
Yes. He's like the anti-Derek Barry.
Well.
No, nowhere you look, hole. There's not a him.
There's not a him here. There's not a him here.
He doesn't know anything about Stonewall. He thinks someone was born there.
Someone was born at Stonewall.
It's the opposite of thinking people died.
Some one person was born.
That no probably born. Is a no plot line in one of those horrible biopics they made about it. Oof. Like someone was pregnant and they gave birth during the.
It represents cycles of life and new beginnings.
The first brick was a baby.
The first brick was a human child.
And the baby threw the brick.
The baby in the brick, yeah. Strong little baby arm. Okay.
Okay, Ray, thank you so much for being our wonderful guest today. What are you plugging? Where can people find your beautiful works?
Oh my God, they can't find me anywhere. I'm in the middle of the woods. I'm in the swamp, baby. No, I'm Ray_HV on Instagram and Twitter. I keep thinking about getting a TikTok, and I'll probably do it like 2 weeks before TikTok becomes irrelevant or illegal or whatever. But I haven't yet. You can follow my dog at Pasta Pity on Instagram. I'm in a staged reading. When does this episode come out?
Monday.
Next Monday.
Yeah, baby. I'm not doing any more performances because I'm traveling and then I'm moving across the damn country. So you can find me in Los Angeles starting in like late September, early October.
Cali, baby.
Yeah.
La La Land.
Yeah. So yeah, you can find me trying to figure out how to pack all these damn plates. How about that?
The worst.
Woof,
that's
indeed.
Exciting.
I am excited.
So we'll we'll have to have you back. Well, you're coming back no matter what. But when you come back, we'll have the big three. As we should. New York, LA, Chicago.
Oh.
The three coasts.
The three coasts. That's exciting. Sam, do you want to tell the people where they can find you?
Hell yep. I'm at Sam Sanish on Instagram, at Moon Selector on TikTok. Because at Sam Sanish was taken, there's a girl named Sam Sanish who sometimes gets to social media sites before me. And you can follow my other podcast, at Buffy Boyfriends, on Instagram and Twitter. I've been really, really busy and haven't updated the Instagram and Twitter in a long time, but the episodes are continuing to come out. And we're at the end of season two with my boyfriend and I watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
It's a great pod, and it's an exciting time. It's an amazing time in the canon of Buffy. Slay.
So true. Slay. Derek, how about you?
You can follow me at Rain Derek's on Twitter. You can follow, let's see, follow Shadowplay Gays. Christina and I are going to absolutely hold each other to watching the musical by the end of summer. It's going to happen. So follow at Shadowplay Gays on Twitter.
I believe you.
No, it's happening. We picked out a time frame.
Sam is shaking his head.
It's happening. I still have the link. I still have the link to the Google Drive with the musical in it. So it's at my fingertips at any time. It could happen.
Yeah. Every time I've had a link to a Google Drive saved somewhere, that's meant I'm definitely about to get to that task immediately.
You know what I'm talking about. It's not. It's front of mind. Front of mind.
I'm excited for the year or decade that happens. I'm excited.
It's happening. What's wrong with you people? Despicable. Hateful.
Additionally, as mentioned with Christine, you should follow at Stan Uatu Pod this summer. Christine is talking about Survivor Panama. Spoiler free, I will be a guest soon. Derek, are you on that?
I think so. I haven't been assigned anything, but I've been told that I will get a text when it's time. But Zach Wurtenberger was on recently. Amazing stuff. What a king.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's so funny. And it's such a great pod. It's so wild to look back at that season and the number of characters that originate. Oof. Characters welcome.
Characters were very welcome back then. Yeah. I can't wait to be an older woman in 2 years when I'm 32.
Oh, don't bring it up. Oh, my God. No. Jeff, so hateful. The thing of like Bruce straining water through three t-shirts is something I still think about like regularly when I'm like outside and need water. I'm like, that you still couldn't get me to do that. That's mm-mm. crazy.
No. But yes, listen to Santa Watch. Follow us at Bitter Jurors Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Ray, for being amazing as always and joining us.
Thank you both of you. I'm gonna let you keep your podcast. I've decided that my hustle takeover as of now. So
monarchy wins.
That's Yay. Tough. I feel like you did a really good job hosting this episode.
I agree.
Yeah, my dog only barked a little bit. It was great. Oh. She loves Toph.
As she should.
Period.
Period. Okay. goodbye, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Slay.